Labor and House Labor and Commerce, please come to order. Like, it's 8:28 in the morning, March 16th. Like to note the presence of Representative Winty, Representative Copeland, Representative Ringstead, and myself, Chair, Representative Cowdery. First order I would like to do, we've had a bill pertaining to Alaska State Parks, and I would like to move that bill to the next committee of referral. We have altered it at the request of the Division of Parks, put some language describing the parks, and Representative Ringstead.
Mr. Chairman, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we adopt Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for HB 486.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, with that, I will move and ask unanimous consent that we pass out Labor and Commerce Committee substitute for HB 486.
Do I hear any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. You're welcome, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we can. We've come on the air now. We're going to deal with sunset review of the Board of Architects and Engineers, and I'd note the presence of Representative Ewing, Representative Ringstead, Representative Copeland, Representative Winty. And we have people here to testify. And the first...
Somebody from Ketchikan.
Two from Ketchikan. Perhaps the first one we could go to would be to Ketchikan, to Mr. George Librant. Mr. Librant, are you there?
Good morning. My name is George Librant, and I'm a registered professional engineer. I think that it's redundant to go around about the board being discontinued. I think that I'll address the recommendation. If the board was discontinued, you'd put Alaska in a very unenviable state. The federal government requires any work, design work that they do in the state of Alaska, though they don't have to be registered. Any of the design work that we do for them has to be by a registered engineer, not particularly in Alaska. I happen to be registered in 10 states, but there's a lot of people in Alaska, this is their sole registration, so I won't address the matter of the board being discontinued. I can't believe that even a remote possibility. I would like to comment on the recommendation. Number one, the continuous education credits. I think that's excellent. I got my BS in 50 and my master's in 56, and I've been in engineering all my life, all the time since then. However, most of it's been in military public works as an administrator and not as an engineer. And I did get registered by an exam and education and et cetera, but I think we should have some form of continuous education credit. I appreciate up here it's going to be a real hardship how we do that, but the only way possible I can see is through correspondence courses of some type with the University of Alaska. The second recommendation is competitive bidding for engineers. I'm violently opposed to that. I don't do that much engineering. I'm also a general contractor. But if people think that by having competitive bidding, they get the best package for themselves, they're very naive. On all your public works projects, state, federal, municipality, on your contractors, you have competitive bidding. I hope nobody's naive enough to think that the low bidder is always the best package for the owner. And I hate to see professional services go out to things, whether it's a surgeon or an attorney or a CPA. I think there's integrity, there's licenses involved, and I really would hate to see competitive bidding being allowed. Again, Alaska being so spread out, we have no way of setting up review boards to pass judgment on consultants, but as the military does, big state agencies can do. In municipalities like Ketchikan, there's no way they can do it because they don't have engineers to review the consultant proposals. But I still would prefer the system that exists rather than have competitive bidding. The third comment is the right to take examination. The board has the right. It's pretty hard when you say you got 85% of your education done, and then the next statement says you have 4 years acceptable to the board. I think it's the board's prerogative, and it should remain their prerogative, who's allowed to take the exam. If I had, say, 3 years, 9 months experience, and I had 8.2% of my academic credits toward my civil engineering degree, that's the subject matter for the board to think. I don't think the board will let you take your thing if you had 10% of your credits, so I think that, I don't think there's any need to change to that. The fourth recommendation is rotating the board and putting lay people on. I think there should be lay people on any public board. I also feel that the board should be rotated, so you should have continuity on any board, but I think that you should also bring in people. As you get older, your mind gets more locked in. The more you stay on something and do it, you get more complacent. So I think it should be a rotation. That's the four recommendations. The analysis of the public needs, number 8, there's a question of whether a photograph should be submitted for your registration. Positively, your photograph should be submitted because you'll find that there's been cases, I don't know enough about Alaska, but I do know in cases on the East Coast where people have died, their certificate is still there and somebody's using it, and it's pretty hard if you don't have a picture of who you got registered. Thing. You require a picture on, I'm certified as a blaster and a powderman in the state of Alaska. You have to have a picture on these things to see who you've got, and I think that should continue. There's one thing that's not addressed in this. I would like to see the more fund available for the enforcement of the regulations. One thing that bothers me, I see plans put out by alleged engineers and architects for public bidding that do not bear a professional stamp. And right in the law under section 8.48.221, it says positively any professional engineer that puts out a design should affix his stamp to it. But it's hard for the board to do this because the enforcement section is so on demand. And that's an area I would like to look into. I don't know if it's the prerogative of this time to do that, but that's one thing that does bother me. Thank you very much for listening to my comments today.
Thank you very much for your comments. Next online, we'll get back to the chairman.
Yes, I would like to just to put out on the network, according to you, Mr. Liebert, the Senate has came up with a substitute bill. It's number 438, and it changes the board somewhat, and I'd like to know the comments of some of the people that's going to testify. And basically it says the board consists of 9 members appointed by the governor, having the qualifications that are set out in Alaska statute 0848031. It says the board consists of 2 civil engineers, 1 land surveyor, and then it deleted 1 mining engineer. And then it says 2 engineers from other branches of the profession of engineering, and 3, or it deleted, and it says 3 architects and 1 public member. And I would like, that's the main changes in the makeup of the board, so I'd like people to consider that and have comments on that. Mr. Liebern, do you have any comments on that, on the Senate's version?
As I understand it, sir, you deleted the mining engineer and added the layperson. Is that correct, sir?
That is true. We didn't do it. The Senate has did that. They've got a Senate substitute bill over to us. I'd just like your comments on it.
I appreciate what you said. If the Senate did that, I think myself, the mining engineer should remain on the board. If you have 3 architects on there, again, architects is very variable like civil engineering is. I think it would be my suggestion to keep a mining engineer and delete one of the architect positions. I definitely feel you need a layperson on any public board. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The next person to testify is Maloney, Patrick Maloney in Ketchikan.
Good morning. I'm Patrick Maloney, and I presently work for Ketchikan Public Utilities, and I share some of the same concerns that Mr. Librand expressed. Needless to say, I'm in favor of maintaining a board, maintaining specific laws to govern how engineering takes place in the state of Alaska, and of course in my capacity with the municipal government, public safety and public welfare is kind of a foremost consideration, and I would like to see these things be continued, monitored, and enforced. Regarding the issue of continuing education, I think it's a good idea. I'd like to see some sort of proposal as to how you would structure such a thing, because I think that some people in their work may work more directly with engineering day to day, and some people may be only indirectly related, say as administrative type people who don't necessarily get directly involved in engineering design calculations, etc. And I think that some credit should be given. I mean, in other words, if you're going to maintain a certain point count or something for continuing education credits, that some point count ought to be given for that person's career activities, you know, on an annual basis or you know, something like that, so that because as Mr. Librand pointed out, it would be a hardship for some people to actually obtain the education if it required any coursework. Correspondence courses are good, but I sometimes have found that we can get through a correspondence course and not necessarily have any reliable benchmark of what you've accomplished. And so I'd hate to set up a system where the state at large relies on unverifiable source for the education, whereas a person's day-to-day career is no question a form that does come under daily and annual scrutiny by the public that serve. On the question of competitive bidding, I too feel that to put engineers, architects, etc. into a competitive bid situation would not serve the public interest any more than if you had to go out and say solicit bids for a medical operation. That's just, you know, that's not necessarily going to get you the best result. And I feel that since the profession requires technical expertise and experience, just as the medical profession or the legal profession, to require the competitive bidding, you may get the better price in the beginning, but in the long run, you may not get the professional service that you're paying for, and consequently, the public may not be as well served and protected by the results of your efforts. Those were the two main things that I was concerned about. I didn't really have as much time to review this document, having just seen it for the first time this morning, but one other point that I'd like to raise, a situation that occurred here recently in Ketchikan and does not seem to be adequately addressed in the ASO 848, is the registration, say, of municipal employees when they perform engineering as the normal function of their job. We, for example, here at Ketchikan Public Utilities, we have for years engineered and constructed our own, and of course operated our own water system, our own electrical system, and our own telephone system. And as far as I know, there's never been any question about the registration requirements for a person that's designing our telephone lines, for example, or our electric lines. And of course, I maybe don't need to point out that electricity is potentially very dangerous, and And so it certainly is incumbent that the person that's doing the design work know what the heck they're doing. And yet, no one's ever questioned KPU building its own lines. And now, all of a sudden, situation came up here where we designed in our own engineering department a building, and it went out for public bid. This building was to be used by our own, you know, our own operation. And suddenly the question of, well, these plans are not stamped by a registered engineer, so therefore they can't be put out. In reviewing the law that exists in the last statute of 48, it's kind of uncertain, although you sort of have a catch-all in there under exemptions, specifically under, let's see here, under section 0848.331, exemptions, article 12 under that. An officer or employee of an individual firm, partnership, association, or corporation, which officer or employee practices architecture, engineering, or land surveying when required by his official capacity or work duties connected with his employment, if the individual firm, partnership, association, or corporation is not engaged in the business of offering architectural, engineering, or land surveying services to the public. Well, this would be the case of the engineering department of a municipality, of a municipal utility company, indeed, of a private corporation, apparently, or individual firm partnership, any of those. I think that somehow ought to be made a little more explicit. Maybe that exemption ought to clarify that a municipality it ought to include a municipal corporation, say, so that it isn't an issue. Or if it's not to the best interest that municipalities can do their own engineering, then that ought to be made clear in the law. And then, of course, in that case, then we'd have to have a registered engineer to design all of our electrical lines, telephone lines, water piping systems, pressure reducing stations, dams, all the facilities that we normally keep in practice, diesel electric plants, et cetera. So I just think that it ought to be consistent in its application. And with that, I'll just let it go. Thanks for hearing me out. Good morning.
Good morning. We appreciate your comments. We'd like to remind that we have a large number of people to testify, and hopefully we can, we're reviewing the sunset review of the Architect and Engineer Board, and I think there was other legislation. Representative Furness, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to pose a question to Mr. Trager. Last year, I thought we handled the sunset review of the Architectural Engineers Board. I recall there was a big controversy over wanting to drop out land surveyors, and we insisted that they stay in because there were different classifications and whatever.
No.
You recall what that may have been?
No, sir, no.
That, I think what we dealt with, Representative Furness, was the competitive bidding of architects and engineers, and we discussed that issue, and it wasn't the sunset review. It was a separate issue competitive bidding.
I'm aware of that one. We passed that one.
But we had quite a lot of testimony on that. It generated a lot of concern. The next one I'd like to go to out on the network would be to Fairbanks, to Mr. Earl, is it Beislein. Earl, are you there? And Mr. Jonathan, and also a handman. Would you come and give your views on the sunset review of the...
Fine, thank you. Chairman Cowdery, members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, my name is Earl Beislein, president of the Fairbanks branch of the Alaska Society of Professional Engineers and president of the Alaska Miners Association. As a lifelong Alaskan, a registered professional engineer, and a mining engineer by profession, I offer the following comments. The State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors performs a duty that is of major importance to the safety of the public and the first-class design and construction of many facilities and services required by society to assuring that competent engineers are utilized in the various facets of engineering work. Consequently, the board should continue to exist and be given maximum authority in carrying out its responsibilities. Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 438 proposed to alter the makeup of the board. Rather than reducing or eliminating membership in professional fields, I suggest that the board membership be increased to a number that allows for a public member, if not in conflict with existing statutes, and the retention of a mining engineer, which is shown in the bill as a deletion. Public members are of value to such a board to give an overall view of thoughts of the general public. Elimination of a mining engineer is not sound in view of the current activities and increasing development of mineral resources directed towards supplying essential minerals to meet the needs of society and to bolster local and state economy through employment directly and indirectly in service businesses. Also, the state administration has emphasized the importance of the mineral industry to Alaska by recently establishing a division of mining in the Department of Natural Resources to further enhance mineral development. Now, a further statement, I certainly compliment the Labor and Commerce Committee for your point in passing House Bill 211, and certainly hope you can encourage a passage by the Senate Labor and Council and the Senate as a whole. Thank you for the opportunity to making the following comments, or the foregoing comments.
We thank you for showing up this morning and expressing your views. Mr. Is it Johnson?
It's Mr. Johansson. He's approaching the mic.
Johansson.
Woody. Woodrow Wilson Griffin.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Bill.
My name is Woodrow Johnson. I'm a past president of the Fairbanks branch of the Alaska Society of Professional Engineers, and presently a member of our political action committee. I'm a registered professional civil engineer and land surveyor, practicing my professions in Alaska since 1940. I'm speaking to you today as a private citizen with deep concern for the state of Alaska, the citizens of the state, and in particular the architect, engineer, and land surveyor profession. I will address committee substitute for Senate Bill 438 now in your committee. We can't imagine that your committee would consider curtailing or eliminating the activities of the Board of Architect, Engineers, and Land Surveyors as authorized under Section 3, Chapter 179, SLA 1972. If a functioning board was ever needed in this state, it is needed now, with capital improvement projects now being considered by our legislature and recommended by the governor in an amount exceeding $2 billion. These projects will be designed by and constructed under the professional supervision of the architects, engineers, and land surveyors. These individuals must be certified as qualified by the board, which administers examinations, examines experience records, establishes regulations, bylaws, and a code of ethics, all to establish and maintain competence. To protect the public and to ensure the continuation of the high level of performance, the board must continue to function. I do have some constructive comments on the bill. I question the makeup of the board as proposed. To eliminate the mining engineer from the board is inconsistent with the increasing importance of the mining industry. The administration and the legislature recognizes that mineral industry will assume increasing importance in the economic fabric of the state. There should be at least one representative of the industry on the board. We have no objection to the addition of a public member, but don't eliminate a professional and replace him by one who is a public member. I personally resent the term public member used to define a non-professional. We architects, engineers, and land surveyors are all members of the public. This board meets 5 times a year, during which times it examines a minimum of 350 applications for examination in 3 different disciplines. It holds public hearings and reviews treatises for practice in Alaska. To accomplish this work, there must be a minimum of 3 professional qualified in each of the professions. You must not reduce the board. Remember that this board oversees 3 different professions. The lack of an adequate budget is a continuing problem with this board. Fees for licenses and applicants for examination amount to approximately $60,000 a year. And the amount budgeted for operation of the board varies between $10,000 and $20,000, a sum barely adequate to hold the 5 required meetings a year. For some time, the board has existed with less than its full complement of members, and although it cannot function as it should, the reduced cost stays within the inadequate budget. The office staff consists of a licensing examiner and a part-time clerk typist provided by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. This small staff cannot possibly answer the telephone inquiries, process the paperwork, and present to the board complete applications at each of its meetings. As a result, the processing of applications is delayed and the applicant is a frustrated individual. The board needs an executive secretary, a registered professional, and a full-time clerk typist. I have one other subject I'd like to comment on, and that is in the Board of Architects and Engineers and Land Surveyors, the pamphlet as printed in July 1982, we have on page 4 the powers and duties of the department, meaning the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. And these powers are very similar to the powers shown on page 11, the powers of the Board of Architects and Engineers Examiners, with the exception of an investigating authority, which is retained by the Department of Commerce. As a result of this dual responsibility, it seems to me that we are not getting the activities from the board and from the department which would permit us to police the profession throughout the state. As it's my understanding, we have one license review individual who actually runs the office in Juneau for the board, and this individual has very little time to investigate any problems. The Department of Commerce has an investigator which does do some investigations, but in about the last 10 years, to my knowledge, there has been no follow-through, and there has been no professional who has been called on the carpet and made to account for his actions. I think that if we are going to have the laws in the regulations which states that we are going to do certain things, we should certainly organize our board and department and fund it so that these functions can be performed. I want to thank you for hearing me out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is Mr. Vince, is it Hanneman?
Hanneman.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. This is Vince Hanneman, President-elect of the State of Alaska Society of Professional Engineers, Dean of Engineering at UAS. I'm also a registered professional engineer in Ohio, Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama, and here in Alaska. I've been a professional since the mid-1950s. I'm the youngster in the trio testifying this morning. I would like to present our opposition to the modification of Section 1, Paragraph B, that is the deletion of the mining engineer, and in my view, the addition of a layperson, considering that we have inadequate funds to conduct the business of the board. The addition of a layperson would add, to me, about zero to the purposes of the board, that is the public safety and welfare. I would like to add one additional comment concerning the continuing ed. Well, 211 is not up for consideration by your group. You have already done a very excellent job on it. But the continuing ed item for engineers and professionals can be supported by UAF if we had some additional funds to provide videotape. We are in the midst of accomplishing a video series, but we have to charge a fairly high fee for this in order to break even. Gentlemen, I thank you for your time and your support of 211. I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Vince. You say the youngster there in Fairbanks. We have a couple of youngsters in our audience here. They're from the U.S. government class at the Juno Douglas High School. It's Mr. Ken Gilbert and John Snyder. And we'd like to welcome you to the committee and hopefully observe how the committee works and how this committee works. And I hope when you grade this work that we'll at least get a passing grade. We'd like to welcome you again. Representative Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Hanneman, in the audit report on the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, the first recommendation deals with legislation requiring continuing education for architects, engineers, and land surveyors. And you touched on that. Could you comment a little bit about the needs in that area, and should that be addressed in our legislation or separately? Thank you.
Representative Copeland, I think that it should probably be addressed separately. We have underway 8 courses that are completed and on videotape. The problem is that we've had to take funds that were to be used for other purposes, invest them in this continuing ed item, and now we have to charge to try to recover the funds. If this were funded separately, we could make it available at a much reduced cost, if any cost, to the practicing profession, and therefore maintain the profession throughout the state. This includes not only the School of Engineering, but the School of Mineral Industries, too.
Thank you. Because of the constraints of time, maybe yourself and Dr. Beislein, Woody Johansson could mail some additional written comments to us on this and other matters, and the committee, I'm sure, will look at it very favorably. Thank you.
You'd be most happy to.
Yes, thank you. At this time, I'd like to go to Anchorage to Mr. Wally Wallenstein. Wally, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning.
This is Wally Wallenstein, an architect from Anchorage and an immediate past member of the Board of Registration for Architects, Land Surveyors, and Engineers. We have not been privy to the recommendations that we've been hearing about continuing education as one of them. continuing education, the only way it's going to be feasible, if it's done on a national level, as far as architects are concerned. We have presently one state in the union that requires continuing education, and it has caused a lot of problems in reciprocity. NCARP, which is the organization that establishes the architectural examination, which is a national council of registration boards, has set up a policy for continuing education. But their recommendation has always been that it has to be approved by all the states in order not to cause a problem for reciprocity. I understand that the other recommendation is a lay member on the board. I do not agree with putting a lay member on any professional board. On a national level, again, I personally know of no nadir-like groundswell in Alaska for a lay member. And if the legislative bodies are intending on appointing a lay member, I certainly would urge a public hearing of the professionals to secure their input. As a member of both regional and national levels of NCARP, National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, I know of no significant achievement which was the result of a lay membership of any state, unless they were educators. Most of the lay members in other states are either educators or attorneys. But as I said before, I know of no significant advancement in our educational process, examination, or whatever that has ever been the result of a lay member on any board. So I strongly would urge the council to reconsider any thoughts of appointing a lay member on our professional boards. There are a lot of boards that presently exist in the states where lay members can be appointed if the need arises. I would like to address, first of all, the sunset law, sunset bill abolishing the board. I am assuming that the chairman of the board, Wayne Jensen, in Juneau will address himself on the need of the board. Suffice to say that the consumer will not be saved by the abolishment of the board. As you are aware, the board sole existence is to protect the public health, welfare, and safety of the public, and it is the consumer advocate to ensure that the public is served. I'd like to address a few other minor things on the board that I found as a member. If the public are not presently served or protected, it is due to the inability and lack of concern in the department to litigate the many complaints which are received by the board and the department. Yearly, a long file of complaints are presented to the board by the department investigator with a recommendation of the state attorney general's office with a recommendation that they be closed. Due to the length of time these complaints have been on file.
Wally, Rep. Dane Furness has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Wally, for your testimony this morning. I can understand your ambivalence of wanting to put a public member. It appears that, at least from what we've been doing this last 2 years, being first in legislators, that most boards do have a public member. Just yesterday, we had the barber and, I guess, hairdresser's board before us, and they had a similar kind of complaint. There has been a recommendation that perhaps one of the architects be dropped and in its place the public member. I guess philosophically, there are those who feel that public member, not being a member within the profession, provides at least some overview and input on behalf of the public as far as consumer protection. That's a philosophical position of which I really don't have a good handle on. But what do you think, if it just has to be a public member, and again, this is somewhat consistent with other boards, if we drop, say, one of the architects?
There is no way that the administration of the architectural reciprocity files and for the young professional wanting to take the examination, there's no way two architects can handle that. Right now, I don't know whether this committee is aware, but the thesis that's required for reciprocity are not done at these 4 or 5 meetings during the course of the year. They are done outside of those meetings because there is not sufficient time to review all those pieces during those meetings. And two architects will not have enough time to do all this work. And I strongly urge that you resist any recommendation to delete one of the architects on the board. And I agree with Mr. Johansson in Fairbanks that if you're going to put a layman on the board, it would be an additional member than what presently exists.
Thank you, Wally.
I do have one other short comment here, if you can bear with me.
Sure, please continue.
It's the matter of the budget of the board. One of the other frustrating parts of being a member of the board was the inability of the board to secure adequate funds in order for it to do its duty. It's a constant battle, and I don't see any reason why this. It was rather amusing the other day to listen to the pharmaceutical board having the same problem. I listened to Senator Fisher here in Anchorage the other day, who made a statement that one of his achievements would be to have every board be self-sufficient. And the Architect and Engineers and Land Surveyors Board, as was pointed out by Mr. Johansson, could be self-sufficient if they would be able to get the funds that they generate in dues. And they don't. We are constantly have to struggle to get funds. That $18,000 does not do the job. Again, I appreciate very much being heard, and I'll be glad to answer any other questions.
Thank you, Wally. Hopefully you can stand by there. We have other witnesses, and perhaps if we have time, we have a floor session at 10. If we have time, you can have additional comments from perhaps on some of the other members or other people to testify.
I'll be standing by.
Sandy, are you there? Sandy Sampson in Anchorage?
Keep coming to the microphone. Do I have— I'm here now. I think Wayne Jensen will speak more for the board, but as a newly appointed architect, there are some things that have become apparent to me very quickly. regarding the makeup of the board, I would be disappointed to see the number of architects reduced. There's an advantage to having geographic distribution of the architects. Right now we have Wayne and Juno and myself in Anchorage. There is not currently an architect in Fairbanks. Each of these regions of the state have very different requirements in terms of building and construction. And I think that when you have maybe a complaint from some member of the public about an architect, that it's appropriate to have architects from different regions of the state be able to evaluate those sort of complaints, as they might be climatically related, and architects more familiar with the region where the complaint came from could better evaluate it. Also, it's important for architects who are very good. As far as continuing education credits go, I think it would be extremely difficult for the state or the board to evaluate all the courses that people might take. There's a lot of courses offered nationally every year by different organizations, and if we were to require continuing education credits, while in concept it seems like a good idea, in fact it could be very difficult to handle administratively. I think that the board should have the sole ability to determine what is required for a person to take an exam in engineering or architecture, and I'm satisfied with the way that is working right now. Let's see if there's any other comments here that I want. Oh, yes, concerning the budgeting process, I don't know if people outside of the profession can understand how important it is for board members to be able to travel to the regional and national conferences and see what is going on nationally in terms of changes in the profession. And the idea that the board has a minimal budget just set up to handle 4 or 5 meetings a year and is not budgeted for any additional activities does not make sense when there's so much for board members to learn in order to keep up with what is going on and be able to evaluate properly the issues that face them.
Thank you, Sandy. We appreciate your comments.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question.
Representative Kopanen has a question.
In regard to increasing the ability of the board to act fiscally and so on, and give them more finances, how would you feel about extending the range of fees? I mean, it seems to be a balance one way or the other.
Well, what do you mean by extending the range of fees? Currently, the registration fees that architects and engineers put into the general fund are not returned to the board. About one-third of the money that is received by the state is then returned to the board.
According to the audit figures, it's true you're about $8,000 down below the fee, but $8,000 isn't going to give you that much more money. And some years, of course, it's the other way around. About $108,000 collected per year through fees, and expenditures are a little over $99,000.
Is that for this board only?
Correct.
Okay, I have not seen those audit figures, and that, that conflicts slightly with the hearsay that I've heard. However, I think that the $30 fee that I pay annually is, I was surprised it was that low when I first became licensed, and I would have no objection to a small increase spread over all the people who are paying their license in order for the board to more properly function. And this also brings to mind one other comment I forgot to make earlier, and that is regarding complaints about professionals that the board receives and that are then investigated by the Department of Commerce investigators. I feel personally that the board should be able to direct the Department of Commerce and the Attorney General's office to prosecute some of those cases. I think they should have the discretion to say, this is a case that is important to us and we do want to prosecute it, as opposed to having to just follow the recommendations of the Attorney General.
Yes, I can see that it's a problem. You have over 4,000 active licensees to look after. So, the board does have a large responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to come back to Anchorage. I have Jennifer Strickler. I mean, oh, back to Juno. Sorry, I was thinking I was going back to my hometown.
The average of $10, that would be $40,000 additional, which would give them a lot more leeway.
Thank you. Would you please identify yourself for the record and spell your last name, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jennifer Strickler, S-T-R-I-C-K-L-E-R, and I am the management analyst for the Division of Occupational Licensing in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. The department supports continuation of the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. We feel that the board is necessary for the protection of the public and that the board has licensed, competent, qualified practitioners. We agree with the committee substitute for Senate Bill 438 in keeping with the governor's wishes that we oppose additional members or new boards and commissions. We are satisfied with the one public member on the board. And as far as the continued competency goes, we agree with the wording put in the committee substitute of continued competency and not continuing education. We see, we view continuing education as just a means, one way of measuring continued competency, and this would give the board the latitude to determine what continued competency is.
My understanding then that you or the administration agrees to that it would be in the best interest to delete the mining engineer from or the Senate bill, which is basically what the Senate bill committee substitute for Senate Bill 438 does. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, we have really no opinion on which or decision which position should be replaced with a public member, but we do feel that there should be a public member on the board, and we leave that to your discretion.
Okay, thank you. Representative Copeland?
Yes, I was going to raise the same question. It appears that with the negotiations in Juneau for reopening the mines, the Red Dog, and the necessity of ensuring that these very complex operations be carried out safely and in the public interest, especially with the environmental considerations, we do need trained mining engineers, and it would seem that leaving one on the board is a necessity.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Copeland. The what is the opinion of yours of how often the board should be reviewed by the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, we feel that the sunset process is a very good process, and we agree that 4 years is fine.
Has the Board of Architects and Engineers and Land Surveyors filed an annual report to the legislature in recent months, to your knowledge?
Sir, they have submitted their annual reports every year.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Furness?
Thank you to Mrs. Strickler. There's always a judgment question as to should we have a public member on the board, and I think there is some fairly good reasoning as to why, but the gentleman, I believe, from either Ketchikan or Fairbanks mentioned that he was somewhat offended in that...
Wally.
Was it Wally that said that they are public members, they are members of the public, and you know that does make some sense. I guess the question is, can we really justify taking out some of the competency on the board where these people are responsible and replacing them with the person that has no competency within the area of discipline? And has the Department really looked at that In some instances, it may be necessary, but in other instances, it may not be necessary. Has that been given any consideration?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have given that consideration. We, along with the governor's office, still support the idea of public members being on the board to give input as to the consumer's viewpoint.
That's a comment, Mrs. Ruffio.
Pardon?
The consumer oftentimes voiced their viewpoint by not subscribing to the service. For example, if the architect and engineer field gets so expensive, their own internal rules and regulation become so encumbersome, the consumer will rebel at those points, and that's another avenue of getting adequate consumer input. The premise that if you choose a person at random out of 500,000 persons to be that lay person on the board, that person may not have one iota of thoughts as to what that general public does, what the general public really wants. As I recall, there is no mechanism whereby the public member can really poll the thinking of the general public. We don't make that in any of our boards. And they're simply there, oftentimes wanting a seat. I've been on many boards and commissions, more particularly education boards, and it's been good to have a public member there, but for the most part, they didn't know anything about education, and they throw in a few bobs occasionally, but we could have probably used another education person and made that a more productive seat, you know, just for the sake of a comment.
Thank you. Any other questions, the witness? Thank you. Next person here in Juneau to testify is Wayne Jensen. Wayne, would you come up and identify yourself? And we apologize that the other day we didn't get to you, but we had a full schedule at that day, too.
Thank you. We met with the same situation at the Senate, so we were used to it by yesterday. My name is Wayne Jensen. I'm the chairman of the Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. We have reviewed the budget and audit report, and we've also reviewed the committee substitute for Senate Bill 438, I believe it is. I have a few comments that I'd like to make on those, and then I can answer some of your questions. First of all, in addition to the public member on the board, the board as a whole feels that a public member could be very helpful. The dilemma that we get into is, where do we assign that public member if we're given a choice? And the one thing that we have to keep in mind is this board really is three boards. It's a board of land surveyors, a board of architects, and a board of engineers. In most states, those are separate independent boards. They're represented by 3 to 7 member boards each. We have already combined this board into sort of a super board by taking advantage of the similarities in our professions and made it into one board. That works very well, it seems like, in that we have members from the land surveyors that are able to act on architects' issues, and they're not directly involved in the profession. So we have sort of de facto public membership anyway, because we have other professions acting on different professions' policies. The other thing that comes into mind is that if the decision is made to add a public member, where should that member be added? And the dilemma that we get is that we have 5 engineers on the board. We regulate 6 distinctly different engineering professions. Only 2 of those professions have designated positions, civil engineers and mining engineers. There is no designated position for mechanical, electrical, petroleum, chemical engineering. We do not feel that any of those disciplines is any less important to the protection of public health, safety, and welfare than any other. So our recommendation would be that if a public member is added to the board, and if the board is not increased to a 10-member or 11-member board, that position should come from the mining engineer. Not because we don't see an increase in the activity of mining, or that we don't think that mining discipline is important, but just that we can't say that it's any more important than the other four disciplines of engineering that are not represented on the board. Another item that I'd like to mention would be the length of terms. The committee substitute the Senate bill, reduced the length of term from 6 years to 4 years. We favor that. That would, I think, puts it more consistent with some of the other boards, and we have no objection to that. As a matter of fact, that would probably be some advantages to filling board membership, board position. The last thing I'd like to mention would be the funding level that we experience. There's been a lot of statistics flown around this morning, and I think maybe Harry Traeger later could provide some more accurate statistics. We do, however, generate considerable more money to the general fund than what we spend. My belief is that's in the neighborhood of 2 times. The money that we generate goes into the general fund, and it certainly is not dedicated to this board's operation. We do have certain responsibilities, though, that we have to maintain, and we are members of the National Council of Engineering Examiners and the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, which are both national organizations that produce the examinations. They monitor the continuity between reciprocity across the United States. And in order for Alaska to be effective in making sure that the examination is prepared to our satisfaction, that it tests the subjects that we feel are important to Alaska, and that we maintain a consistent registration of, for applications across the United States, we have to maintain an active presence in those organizations. We have not been able to do that consistently because of lack of funding. Not an expensive thing to do. We have been able to do that on some occasions only because there's been money left over in our budget because for some reason we didn't have a full board appointed, or we had people lacking from attending membership. But we certainly would favor some increased funding level to continue our participation in these national organizations. The next level that we'd like to see increased would be the staff level at the Department of Commerce. Our applications increase approximately 50% per year over the last 4 or 5 years. We've been doing that with the same staff support at the Department of Commerce. And it sometimes causes a real hardship on applicants because their applications are not being able to process in a timely manner, or they're not being able to complete for board meetings. And it's not because the department is not trying to cooperate on this matter, it's just because they get swamped with the paperwork. We've also made some efforts to simplify the amount of paperwork, but some of the things we've done we feel are not necessarily in our best interest. We've deleted the requirement for personal references because it was 5 pieces of paper for each person that had to be received, categorized, filed, and kept track of it. And we thought that by deleting that requirement, we could help the department in simplifying the application process. We're not so sure that was a good idea. Also, in terms of staffing for the department, the investigations is an area that, as Wally mentioned, has been a continual problem over the years. To the department's credit, it's improved considerably over the last 3 or 4 years. The big problem we still run into, though, is the timeliness in investigations. When a complaint is filed, we feel that complaint should be handled very quickly because in our professions, timeliness is of the essence, and that if a building is being built or a survey is being completed and a complaint is filed, by the time it goes through the administrative procedures, goes through an investigation, is turned over to the Attorney General's office, it's probably a year later. Well, the building is probably already built and occupied, or the survey is done and filed or whatever, and you know, it's almost a moot point at that point. We can certainly, someone can take the person to civil court, or the building falls down, we have that to contend with, but we feel that we'd like to have the opportunity to have a quicker response to some of these investigations. And I think that probably would lead to increased investigative staff and hopefully some increased support from the Attorney General's office in processing these complaints. With that, I would be available for any questions.
How often do you think the board should be reviewed?
Once every 50 or 60 years would probably be a good idea. the 4 years is, I think, is a minimum period of time. I was on the board 4 years ago when I was first appointed to the board 4 years ago when we went through this before, and it seems like a very short period of time since we've come back, and the issues have not changed significantly. And I think you can see that, too, in the bill that was passed in the Senate. We really went very, very few changes to our board. I could see doing it, but 4 years I would consider to be a minimum period of time. I think six or even eight might be a more comfortable period.
You attended the Senate hearings, I'm sure. Why was the mining engineer singled out, or whose idea was that? Do you have any idea of that? Vision of licensing, or
I'm not sure where
the idea come from.
Where the idea has come from, it's an idea that's been discussed by the board on several occasions when we've been faced with the issue of if our board, if our professional membership is reduced, where does it come from? Because we felt that if a public member is added to the board, that we would probably have to give our recommendation as to what positions should be deleted. The mining engineer was one that's been suggested for the reasons that I gave earlier, is that we do not feel that the mining engineering profession is any more important than mechanical, electrical, petroleum, or chemical engineering in the state, and that we didn't feel that it warranted designated representation when the other disciplines did not.
Was any a mining engineer present at the discussions of deleting this that you know?
Yes, there have been. They were opposed to that.
Yeah, I would imagine. What do you think the department can do? Budgeting seems to be a problem with all the boards, and what do you think what would be your suggestions how we could improve that from a legislature standpoint?
The problem that we've always had is just, accounting. We would like to see some relationship between the revenues generated by a board and the funding that's attributed to a board. And that the process now is that we as a board submit what our proposed budget to the department. The department combines that all in the Division of Occupational Licensing. That is then submitted, it's funded, and then it's all redistributed back out to the boards with no consideration for how much money each board generates. It's more a consideration of what the statutory requirements for number of meetings are for each board. And I think that there might be some, when you're doing these preparing budgets, there might be some consideration giving to the boards that do pay their own way. The Architect, Engineer, and Land Surveyor Board does pay its own way and could even generate more money. Our fees are relatively modest, and they could be increased if there was a necessity. But right now, we're generating more money than we spend, so there's no necessity to increase. As a matter of fact, there's been some consideration for reducing our fees. It wouldn't change the level of service.
Mm-hmm. I think that the fees probably go into the general fund. It's hard to get them back out of the general fund.
That's the one problem we've had, is trying to maintain some accounting between the fees that are generated and the funding that's then attributed to the board. And they're really two separate things. The money that's generated goes this way, and the appropriation comes from a different direction. We'd like to see some relationship between those two and some consideration given when funding is appropriated, because the board does pay its own way and could pay more if the need should arise.
Okay. Any questions of the witness? Any
more questions? One more thing that I'd like to mention.
Sure.
The continuing education issue that came up as a part of the committee substitute for the Senate bill. I believe the wording in there said continuing competence. We don't see that as being a real problem in terms of the concept. It's a really good concept. It's a good idea. Continued education and maintaining continued confidence from all professions is an excellent idea. We're not so sure that the public is going to be protected any more by some sort of an affidavit or a statement that the person has maintained continued confidence. And the one state that has tried this is, there's only one state that's tried it, and they've done it several years ago, and no other state has taken, has determined that it was that important. There's a real administrative problem in trying on a 2 or 4 or 5 year basis, trying to do all the paperwork and evaluate all the credentials of all the applicants that we have to make sure that they're maintaining continued confidence. We have some 4,000 current registered applicants. Their licenses are renewed on a 2 year period. If every 2 years we would have to review the credentials of 4,000 applicants, we'd be talking about a full-time board. And I don't think we can, administratively we can't handle that. And a department can't process all that extra paperwork, I don't think, with the level of staff that they have. So I think administratively it's going to be a real problem, and I don't think that it's really going to add any level of protection to the public.
Thank you. I'd like to note the presence of Representative Pestinger, too. We have any other questions of the witness? We thank you for showing up. Kevin Henderson? Henderson. Would you hear?
I don't have any particular comment.
Okay. Harry Traeger, then, is on the book up next.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. The department, before I go on the air, the department's presentation was made by Jenny Strickler. I thought maybe I'd use a different approach and you'd be kind to me today.
No way. Man, the whips.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Harry Traeger. I'm the Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. I concur with most of the comments that's been made today. A couple of points I would like to make that, first of all, there is a legislative mandate that all fees collected go into the general fund. Second of all, I have strong support for the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. They do an excellent job. There's been many occasions where Mr. Wallenstein, the previous board member, has spent his own funds to travel to national meetings and shared that information back with the board. The level of funding, we continually submit budgets for additional personnel, additional funding, and I can't put the onus on anybody as to who gives us that funding, but it has been maintained at a low level. We're into the stage now where everybody's talking about teleconferencing. I think that's good for some licensing areas. However, I find when you get into technical issues such as the architects, engineers, land surveys, it's kind of hard to evaluate an application over the telephone. I would like to mention, in regards to the public members, the architects presently have a statute on the books that requires the department to mail out annually rosters that total a cost of approximately $7,000 with the printing and mailing, the overtime that has to be paid, etc. If consideration is given to additional public members, the legislators might want to repeal that section. We do make the statute available, but the extra additional cost that's mandated in law that says it has to be mailed out could be repealed. That savings could, without a doubt, finance to public members or whatever the legislators deem appropriate. As far as the investigations go, we try real hard. We've got currently 4 investigators that handle 17 different professional boards and occupations and 4 additional trades that's handling complaints and accusations and things coming in. I would endorse continuation of the board. I think there is a need for it. I have some problems with the state being involved in requirements of continuing education and continued competency, the marketplace should be allowed at some point in time to adjust itself. Although the concept is endorsed by everyone in Laurelville, again, you get into an additional funding problems with the, and if you're going to do the job, you should do it right and be able to analyze all of these continual costs that's submitted. And I know that you folks have heard my statements all week, and I would probably like to stop right now and answer any of your questions.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Traeger. You mentioned the funding situation. It's obvious here that the present fees are adequate. At least it's generating more revenues than being expended. What is the budget process? I would assume you go through and project what the travel and what other expenses are going to be. You in turn submit that budget to the partner, to the commissioner. It goes to review there, and then it's put into the overall budget. The governor and OMB would normally review that. If that's the case, is the budget being cut within the administrative channels, or is it normally cut once it hits the legislative process?
I think it's been cut at both levels. I look at board areas that's outside of occupational licensing, such as the real estate commission. When it was under occupational licensing, it was a two-member support staff function. It's now autonomously, and it has five people staff. They have approximately the same amount of licensees as the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. Mm-hmm. And again, I'd like to iterate that that happened back prior to my time when they were sent out autonomously. I also think that sometimes we lose sight of the fact of public protection. What is the board's responsibilities attached to state agencies versus what would an association of professional members be out in the society that's not supported by public funds?
Mr. Chairman, let me pursue that. The public member, and I think we generally understand the need for public members, but in some instances, particularly, let's say, the architectural engineering land surveyors, is there strong evidence of a need for a public member on this particular board? I qualify that to this degree. A public member ideally should, again, serve as a voice of the public, but I found it virtually impossible for one person to serve as that eyes and ears of the general public, particularly when we don't prepare them through polls or surveys or forms by which they can go out and really attest to what the public is thinking. Secondly, a public member oftentimes, and particularly in a situation like this, probably brings to the table absolutely no competency as to what's happening in the field. And with that in mind, is the evidence so strong that we cannot, particularly in this particular instance, do away with the public member?
Representative Furness, if I might, and I probably failed to notify this committee all week long, but the governor's office is presently in the mode of doing a tremendous study on all boards and commissions. They're analyzing everything to include the need for public members. In response to your questions, before I do that, in regards to the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors, I have some concerns because most of the board members give a lot of their time in proctoring the professional examinations that's given in three different locations. I think this would be a hindrance from public member standpoint. To respond to your question, some boards, the public member is a moving force, and other boards, it is not. Some boards, we find that the public member ultimately turns around to become a quasi-professional member. Sitting here today, I have mixed feelings on public members being on the boards. I know the concept is good, and again, it's laudable the same way continued education and continued competency is. But is that really what, are they really doing what they're put there to do? A couple of boards, such as the physical therapy board, they have an attorney as a public member. He does an excellent job.
excuse me, if I may, was it was the appointment of the attorney, was that done purposely or was that just by happenstance, a person appointed and happened to be an attorney?
I think it was that the person appointed happened to be an attorney. He submitted a resume to the governor's office based on the fact that he had prior involvement with physical therapy. And in response to your question, I don't think there is any diehard evidence of the public members, either good or bad. I think the concept of using the public member because it's public funds spent on a professional licensing board. And I also think that we as a state agency have to analyze how much involvement we want to endorse in the private industry. And how much more regulating we want to do. And that is where we need the expertise on the board.
Harry, how often do you think that the board should be reviewed, in your opinion, by the legislature?
Mr. Chairman, I testified previously, I think the Sunset audit reports are good. It does bring everybody's eyes to be open. I think 4 years should be the minimum. And then I think that possibly some boards, such as the Architects Board, should be allowed to function for longer periods. But again, as I previously stated, the statute as it presently states is at 4 years. And I have no problem with that. It is, it does take a lot of the board's time in responding to legislative audits. It takes a lot of staff time in providing records to the auditors, and sometimes we question where they get their figures and facts from. And I make mention of this because they make mention that one must be qualified before they take a test. But what they didn't elaborate on is that that person that was allowed to take the examination, it was what they call an EIT, an engineer in training, and that's a step toward licensing while one is in school, but not to offer their services to the public at that time. So, and I think there is a distinction that they should have made on it.
Any other questions? We have one more witness. Or anyone on the network have any questions of Mr. Traeger? Hearing none, we thank you, Harry. And we have Mr., is it Menzies?
Menzies, sir.
Menzies? Again, I apologize for not, I know you sat here the other day through the other hearing, but we apologize again for the delay.
Thank you, sir, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Malcolm Menzies. I'm a civil engineering representative on the board.
Could you spell your last name for the record, please?
M-E-N-Z-I-E-S. I'm also a registered land surveyor. I attended several of the Senate meetings and the one last week where they adopted a committee substitute for Senate Bill 438. In the testimony for that, we were informed prior to the meeting by the Office of the Governor that they desired two public members on our board. The board took a position vote in February on that and stated if the Office of the Governor desired two public members, we would rather have our board expanded rather than to lose professionals. Senator Lyson, during that testimony, handed out his committee substitute for 438. Even the committee members did not have it on that date. And he heard from the governor's office, asked myself to review it, and asked for myself to comment as a board. And my comments as a board member stay the same. Number one, if we are must have lay members on the board, we would prefer to have two new members. Two new members of the board, if there's only going to be one member of the board, and if they're only going to allow the board to be nine members, we concur with the committee substitute insofar as we do not want to lose an architect. If we lose the mining engineer, his seat can be fulfilled by the other two undesignated engineers on the board. In other words, we have five engineering members, three architects, and one land surveyor. It so happens now that two civil engineers are also land surveyors, so there's good representation there. We don't think we should lose the architect's seat. We would prefer not to lose any professional. I also testified on continuing education, and the testimony concurred with the commissioner of the Department of Commerce in that, although the idea is good, and in your budget and audit report, you can see that some 80% of the licensed architects, engineers, and land surveyors in our state do some form of continuing education, it becomes an administrative nightmare. Earlier you heard testimony that we review some 300 applicants annually. Well, that's probably at a minimum. The last meeting in February, we reviewed over 200 applicants for licenses. When our examiner has renewal years every other year, he spends at least 3 to 4 months just trying to get our renewals out. So it is very difficult. If you added continuing education on that, it would be a nightmare thing. With that, knowing you have to go to the floor.
We appreciate, I appreciate your saying that doing come to committees and they get handed very short notice a bill to try to absorb. That's a continuing problem that we try to listen to the witness, think about some line of questioning that we might have interest in absorb a bill. It becomes quite difficult for us. But anyway, we appreciate it. Any comments from, we've got a few minutes from the witness or anybody in the in the network that have any additional comments or Representative Furness?
Sir, you mentioned that there are 5 engineers on the board, is that?
Yes, sir.
And you're proposing that if we support the deletion of the mining engineer, that one of the other 5 engineering positions be allocated to mining engineers?
Well, allocated or just that seat could be fulfilled by a mining engineer. There's 2 undeclared members of the engineering profession to be on the board. His seat could be fulfilled with that. I more personally favor what I think you were leading to is not to have a lay member that leave the board. Our 2 days of meetings, 4 to 5 times a year, are just saturated with work activity. And in examining over 200 applicants or professional discrepancies in our profession, I really question how a layperson can technically help us. So much of our work is technical.
You spend quite a bit of your time then, I understand, probably trying to educate the layperson to what they're supposed to see. And
yes, sir, I feel that way. As a new member of the board appointed in November and only had two meetings so far, I think I'm still being educated. So. I think it would be very, very difficult for a lay member.
Thank you. We appreciate your...
Thank you, sir.
Are there anyone else? We've got a couple of minutes for any final comments before we've got to go to the floor in 5 minutes.
Yes, this is Wally Wallenstein in Anchorage.
Yes, Wally, go ahead.
It's rather ironic when we talk about the lay member on the board. When you look at the qualification of the board member, what he has to go through to get on the board. For instance, for an architect, he's got to go to school for 6 years. He has to work for an architect for 3 years before he can take the examination. So that's 9 years minimum. Plus, he has to be licensed for 5 years. In other words, he has to have a minimum of 14 years experience before he can be a member of the board. Minimum. Now we're talking about putting any person walking on the street on the board. Secondly, there's no one, and I'm quite sure the engineer just acknowledged it, there's no one on the board can really contribute to the process until he's been on the board for a year. An architect, there is no way he is going to know the examination process until he attends a regional or a national meeting of NCARP.
Sam.
So I really don't see what that lay member is going to do on the board except taking up some more money, which the board does not have. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Waller. We appreciate your comments, and we'll certainly give it consideration when we make a committee substitute legislation to address this matter. At that time, we're run out of time. We appreciate everyone on the network that have been with us this morning. We'll turn the network back over to the moderator and thank the various the moderators out in the network, and at this time, nothing more to come before the committee, we're adjourned.